So we have 7-day intensive seminar, School of the Master. We have lecture 6, Stem Cells, the Entire Universal Mind at Work. Now, in the Business Week magazine for August 20th and 27th, 2007, Idea Books, in the back of the magazine, and it says Idea Books, and I think it's quite significant. It's called Why Snap Decisions Work. The book is entitled Gut Feelings, the Intelligence of the Unconscious, $25.95 from Viking Press. The science behind the phenomena cited in the bestseller Blink. Okay, in 2000, Capital Magazine Investment Guide ran a stock picking contest. Over 6 weeks of the 10,000 plus entrants could buy, hold, or sell any of the 50 pre-selected international stocks using whatever investment strategy they liked. A German team took a particular unusual tact. Psychologist Gerd Geitzinger and economist Andreas Ottmann stopped 100 pedestrians in Berlin, 50 men and 50 women, and asked them which of the 50 stocks they recognized. Then, as if acting on gut feeling, the duo bought the 10 stocks whose names were cited most often and held them for the duration of the contest. You can probably guess what happened. Geitzinger and Ortmann's portfolio gained 2.5% despite a down market during the period, performing better than 88% of the 10,000 portfolios submitted. Just 2.5%, but it gained. Capital's editor, who chose the 50 stocks in the first place, watched his own portfolio lose 18.5% of its value. The researchers further discovered that the less financial knowledge behind choices, the better. Women queried by the German team recognized fewer stocks than the men, but a portfolio based on the ones they did know earned more than an equivalent group chosen by the men. Geitzinger cites that the investment case study is his new book, Gut Feelings, the Intelligence of the Unconscious, to bolster his central point that intuition often triumphs more than considered reason. The author is the director for the Center for Adaptive Behavior and Cognition, as known as at the renowned Max Planck Institute for Human Development in Berlin. If his thesis sounds a lot like that of the 2005 bestseller Blink, The Power of Thinking Without Thinking, by Malcolm Gladwell, it's because Gladwell drew heavily on Geitzinger's research. But the scientist goes a step further by explaining just why our gut instincts are so often right. Geitzinger is not really as clever a writer as Gladwell, a star at the New Yorker, but the new book does serve as a useful and cleverly written tutorial on decision and how to make them. Intuition, it seems, is not some sort of mystical chemical reaction, but a neurologically based behavior that evolved to ensure that we humans respond quickly when faced with a dilemma, fight or flight. Too much data, however, throws a monkey wrench in the process. The more variables we consider, the harder it is to make the right decision. Anyone who has faced an aisle full of shampoo knows this. Our brains have evolved to take the quickest and most efficient route to a decision, based on an experience and a set of innate and unconscious rules developed since birth to negotiate our physical and social environment. Start considering lots of other information and variables, and the brain slows down or falters. Simply, writes Geitzinger, it is evolutionary adaptation to uncertainty. A complex problem demands a complex solution, so we are told. In fact, in unpredictable environments, the opposite is true. Geitzinger gives one example after another to prove the rule of thumb, beat rational analysis, such as the way a professional baseball player catches a fly ball. Ask the player, and it is likely he couldn't tell you, but researchers have figured it out. He fixes his gaze on the ball in the air, starts running, and adjusts the speed so that the angle of the gaze remains constant. Unconsciously, his brain is making all kinds of tricky mathematical calculations to accomplish his goal, based on its experience with hundreds of prior catches. All the player has to remember consciously is to keep his eye on the ball. Geitzinger shows that how we apply such an approach to medical diagnosis, social situations, and business questions. He also explains how to manipulate the gut feelings of others. A manager can mold a corporate culture by leaving clues that can be noted by employees. These might include also always leaving her door office door open, or expressing suspicion of absent workers. Pretty soon everyone is opening doors and dropping in on each other unannounced, or choosing not to attend out-of-office conferences. Gut feeling gets a little repetitive, and it would have been more interesting if Geitzinger had gone into more depth about how to use his feelings. Others are doing such thinking, however. Take the political brain by Drew Weston, which is garnering considerable attention from politicians. Weston, also a psychologist, uses the theory of intuition to bolster his argument that a successful political campaign must appeal to voters, to a voter's emotion rather than his reason. In elections, he says, when the reason and emotion collide, emotion wins, and voters ignore the logic of policy positions. That certainly explains a lot about the state of Washington today. So, thought you'd enjoy that little thing, because it's kind of a different way of looking at stuff. Very fascinating. So, we are going now into Lecture 6, Stem Cells, the Entire Universal Mind at Work. Going. A stem cell is a single tiny cell born out of the allness, the infinite beingness. Okay, now. We'll say this again and again and again because it's needed to be said. And get your emotions going on this, not your intellect, not your reason, you know. Get your emotions going on. In the first chapter of Art and Science of Wholeness, we say, God is neither
logical nor reasonable. God is neither logical nor reasonable.
God, to describe God is not to describe him as either logic or reason. God is neither logical nor reasonable. Because there's no logic to anything that God does, and there's no reason to anything God does. Why create so many stars? Why create so many sands on the beach? Why create all these things that are created? There's no logic or reason to it. It's just because God is emotionally in love with it and delights in doing it, or something like that. Okay, now, we have a body that is... It is its original purity and integrity. The body is at all times its original purity and integrity. The body is at all times its original purity and integrity. However, we, with our limited vision, do not see it at all times as its original purity and integrity. We see it with molds and with pimples and with hurts and with whatever we see, all sorts of good stuff. And we see it functioning too. We see our beautiful skin, or we see our not-so-beautiful skin. We see our beautiful eyes, or not-so-beautiful. We see all that stuff. Now, stop and think. If you were to take a microscope, you know what a microscope is? A microscope looks at big things and finds out what's going on inside of them. It looks at a molecule and finds out what's going on inside a molecule. And it shows you what's going on in there with the atoms at motion in there and all these other interesting things. But what a microscope discloses to us most fascinatingly is how many microbes and bacteria we have in our body. How many of these things that we do not see, do not know anything about, but they're in our body. We have no idea how much bacteria we have. We have no idea how many microbes we have. We have no idea what's going on in our body, because all we do is just see the surface. If we were able to look inside of our body, just for instance, look inside of a glass of water, this glass of water that Ellen gave me here, if Ellen looked in here with a microscope, she wouldn't give it to me. She'd throw it out and say, go thirsty, you know. But inside here, I've got so many guys swimming around in here. I got so many things going on in here, so much bacteria, so much fungus, so much everything in there. I mean, if you looked at it through a microscope, you say, I don't want to drink anything. I never drink again, you know. But it's normal. Our body is accustomed to it. I told you the story about the children in Africa. The World Health Organization went down to give them immunization for all the bacteria that's living in the sludge in the streams around which they live. And they were all bacterialized, and they were all given shots and cleaned up. And within a month, they were all dead. All dead. Because those children needed the bacteria. They needed all of that stuff that was in their body, which protected them, which gave them immunization to whatever the bacteria were that were in the streams where they had their defecations, in the rivers where they pissed, and then all of the things that were going on in the area. It was, you know, normal, just normal. I was visiting in Ghana, and we were
Ghana.
We were visiting at the home of one of our students, and he took us out to go to the country club to live there, so we would have a place to go. And as we did this, we went by a creek, and the creek was virtually right behind his house. And in that creek were all the boys and girls swimming and playing. And then along the creek, the toilets emptied into the creek and everything else like that. And then these kids were taking drink out of the water, and they were, you know, swimming in there and totally happy. And not the least bit concerned or not the least bit caring. And then Ellen and I were in the Philippines in Manila, and we had a nice hotel there, and we went down from our hotel to get onto a cab and or walk or whatever we were doing, and we went down to the street. There are several levels of streetcars and other things, and one little boy came running up to the curb, and he bent down at the curb, and he took a drink of water out of the street curb, and dirt, grease, you name it, it was all there. And he took the drink and went like this. He wanted that drink. And I don't think he died. He was immune to that. His body was conditioned to living under those rather sad circumstances. If we had done it, we would not have come home again. We would have come down with everything that he could come down with, because we were not immune to it. But you see, these are the strangest things. We don't know how our body is constituted. We don't know what's going on in our world. And we can know. That's the wonderful thing about it. And that's what I'm getting ready to tell you on the stem cells. We can know. Now, our body has all of these immunities in it. Our body has all of these things in it that are certainly not our original purity and integrity, we would say. But from our body, from all these differentiated cells, cells that have already been given a job to do, out of those differentiated cells ooze out some stem cells, and I like to call them pure white stem cells, that ooze out of the gray cells, let's call them. And that doesn't make them bad, it just makes the color difference. So out of the gray cells, which are our differentiated cells that are already decided to do things, ooze out these white stem cells. 10,000 in our brain alone every day. 10,000 stem cells come out of our brain every day, and these stem cells are not differentiated. They don't know what they're to do. They are just waiting to be told what to do. And our consciousness tells them what to do. Our thought. Now, Gregor was saying something that the vibrations that he felt were so magnificent. He was visiting the different wineries, and as he went into the different wineries, he had different feelings about them. They were just vibrations coming out of them. They were not good and bad. It was just that's the attitude of the people in those wineries. They were very dynamic or very moderate or whatever, and the winery that he's going to be working for had the most beautiful vibrations. He said, when I walked in there, I just felt good right away, and the longer I was there, the better I felt. He said, I knew that was the place I wanted to be, because it was good vibrations. Now, how could a place like that have vibrations that are good or bad and be so definite and so obvious to anyone? Gregor went to many places, and he had the vibrations of many places, and none of them turned him on like the vibrations of the winery that he's going to work for. So now, how does that work? How does that work? Every winery and every organization, you might say, has the opportunity to present the world with its vibrations if it wishes. And its vibrations are a large part of its success. A large part of its success ability to reach out and be a successful organization. Well, now, these vibrations come from the oozing out of the white stem cells in the people who are in control, the people who are the masters of the winery. Now, we might look at a winery, you and I, and we might say, this guy owns it, this guy is the boss, this guy is the bookkeeper, this guy is the sales department manager, and this guy is the vintner. Is that what you call him? Vintner, the one who makes the wine, the one who checks the wine, the one who makes sure it's...
Huh? The winemaker. They just call it the winemaker.
All right, the winemaker. Vintner sounds so nice. It's a winemaker. So this guy is the winemaker. You know what I'm saying? This guy is the winemaker. This guy is the guy that puts the attitude into the wine, if you will, of his belief that that wine is perfect. The boss doesn't even do that. The boss doesn't have that belief in it, that confidence in it. The boss doesn't have that awareness of it. He has a general idea, but he doesn't have it unless he's right there working down in the wine, working right in with, I'll call him the vintner, I like that word. He's working right with that guy who's choosing the flavors, who's choosing the wines, who's choosing the grapes, and who reaches in and says, whoops, there's a bad bunch of grapes, we don't want them in there. And whoops, this here. And he goes right there, and he knows it. He knows it. He's perfect. But he loves it. And his love just generates through the entire wine that comes out, and the people go there and say, wow, what great wine. And they got the same wine next door, but a different vintner. And that vintner doesn't have that same pizzazz, that same belief, that same inner confidence, as we were reading here in Business Week magazine, how they were choosing stocks and bonds and basing on quick snap judgments that was the best to make for the most effective way. Well, our white stem cells, our beautiful, undifferentiated stem cells, are coming out of our brain every day. And we can be just like that vintner in that winery who puts so much love into his product, into his efforts, into his work, that it radiates it outwardly to everybody. People come on the campus here of the University of Healing, and they say, wow, I feel such a bliss here, such a feeling of love, such a feeling of joy. And then they hear an argument and they say, what happened? What happened? It all went kapach. It all went dead. What happened? And I say, that is for you to be blind to. You bring your love here and you put your love in. If you see anybody who is unhappy, you surround them with your pure white light of love and have them be happy in your world. You don't allow anything to be unhappy. The vintner who is visualizing that perfect wine if he sees anything, if he sees, he senses that the water coming through is not pure. Somehow or other, the line got messed up. He shuts it off right away. And he goes and checks it out, and he says, what happened here? And then somebody admits to the fact that there was a clog in the line or something, and they didn't stop it right away. But he knows it, because he's sensitive to it. And he immediately stops it, he immediately puts the right action into motion, and then the wine is back producing its perfection again. But you see, we have to be every single moment on top of ourselves. We have these stem cells in us, these beautiful, beautiful, original purity stem cells that we are. And these stem cells are willing to act instantly to drive us in hell or take us to heaven. It all depends on what we do, if we're going to be in charge. If we allow ourselves at any time to say that we're sick, to say that we're unhappy, to say that we're not successful, if that vintner in that winery were ever to say, this isn't my day, he better stay home. He better stay home. You got to come in. We need you. No, you don't need me. I come in and you have a bad batch. You'll have a batch that does. But do you think you're that important, you silly person? Yes, I think I'm that important. That's what I believe about me and the role that I play in my job. I believe that's who I am. Oh, well, I'm going to tell the boss. Please do. And he tells the boss, and the boss says, what dedication. Pay him double for the day he's off. Really? Pay him double for the day he's off. Because he didn't bring his bad vibrations in to that factory, into that winery, into that product at that moment. Because that could have been $100,000 worth of wine that went up the tube because his bad vibrations got in there and messed it up. And you say, man, if he's that important, if his vibrations are that important, they should give him a raise. Well, you can be sure he's already paid well. And he's paid better than he thinks he's worth. But the big point is, you know how important it is to keep your mind, your body, your thoughts clean and clear. And if you cannot handle it, don't be there. Take a break. Go to town, spend some money. You know, don't go on your job. Don't go into your environment if you cannot take with you your number one vibrations of purity, peace, and goodness. Now, when you do that, your stem cells are all listening. They're not listening to the old cells of the body. They're listening to you. Oh, my eyes are so clear. I see this wine, back to the winery again. I see this wine, the color is so beautiful. It's so magnificent, whatever it is. And what are some words that a winery uses? The bouquet of the wine. Come on. What are some words? Say them.
Aroma,
legs. Huh? Come.
Aroma.
Come. Aroma. Come.
Legs.
Palate.
Legs.
Yeah.
Legs. What does that mean?
When it goes down the glass.
Oh.
You swirl it around in the glass. And
ah.
Kind of.
But you see, that's because you know what you're talking about. And who would think of legs with wine? But true, I can visualize that as you rotate the wine in the glass and then it slowly comes down. And the legs indicate how pure it is. They indicate how strong it is. They indicate how... What? Huh? You don't know that? The character of the wine. I mean, now we're really getting into emotion, aren't we? Oh, the character of the wine. It is enough to make you feel very happy in a very short time, you know. But can you see? This is so important. It is so important that we know who we are and that we feed our stem cells the truth about us. We feed our stem cells this character, these legs, the bouquet. We feed our character, we feed our stem cells this knowledge about these things. And what's going to happen? How do you think that guy, ever got to be the top dog where he is? He got to be the top dog where he is because he lives it. Do you think he's a drunk? Do you think he's somebody who soaks it up? No. He drinks it with such dedication, such a taste. It's just a taste. He's going in there because he knows the bouquet that he wants. He knows the type of things he wants. Now, this, he's teaching that to his white stem cells, his pure, beautiful stem cells in his brain. And his brain stem cells are aware of that. Do you know there are some people in France who are really rather remarkable at smelling flowers? One man, and the Reader's Digest had quite an article about it one time, and in it, it said, this one man, it told a story about him. He was, and this number is incorrect, but he was able to smell 3,000 different scents for flowers. 3,000 different scents. And sometimes it's many, many scents in one group of flowers, in one, the violets of whatever flowers they use, or roses or whatever, and in a group of them he could tell it. And he also knew perfumes, because from these flowers were made perfumes. And he could tell what area of France the perfumes were grown, the flowers were grown, in what area of France, and in what area, somewhere out of the country. And of course, our vintners know this too, our winery people. They can tell this is born on the right side of the mountain, on the left side of the mountain. It's on the sunny side, it's on the cool side. This is, what? You didn't know all that?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, you got an education today. So this is what it's all about. They know that, and they can tell. And they can tell if it's been born in southern Bordeaux, or northern Bordeaux, or eastern, western, or central Bordeaux. They know that if it has been blended, if it has been mixed with another wine to give it a little more body, a little more strength. They know all these things. Now, wine growing, making, tasting, developing is an art. Just like having perfumes is an art. Raising flowers is not just a matter of a pretty field of flowers. Those flowers have to be so properly nurtured and fertilized so that the fragrance will come out. It's just like the grapes themselves. They must receive the proper type of water and the proper type coming from wherever they can get it. And you're up at the Wolf River, is it?
Alexander Valley.
The Wolf River?
Russian River.
Huh?
Russian.
The Russian River. You could tell me the answer I want to hear. I don't care about Alexander Valley. Who knows the Alexander Valley, but the Russian River, ha, 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 ha. You know, everybody knows the Russian River except me. But the thing is, the Russian River brings water to them that is very vital and dynamic. The Russian River has been baptized by whoever baptized it to say that this water is sacred and holy and special to give the wines the flavor and things that they want. Do you understand me?
Yes, sir.
This is done on purpose. This is done on purpose. Everything blessedly, wonderfully, figuratively, factually, is done on purpose. Now, are you a genius?
Yes.
That's a yes, huh?
Yes.
Yes. Use a little more articulation. Yes. All right. Are you a genius?
Yes.
Yes. Are you all a genius?
Yes.
All right. Now, why are you so stupid? No. And you merely say to me, I couldn't tell anyone that they were stupid, because then I would be stupid, and I see everyone as a genius. Like, what are you doing, Herb? You know? You telling us we're stupid because you're stupid? I mean, only a stupid person could see a stupid person, right?
Right.
So, would I ever call you stupid?
No.
Would you ever call yourself stupid?
No.
Would you ever call anybody else stupid?
No.
What do you call your dog?
Dog.
No, what do you call your dog? Brilliant. Genius.
Brilliant.
Super. What do you call your dog? You say...
Sydney.
Huh? Not. I know his name is Sydney. This is Rex. You know, Rex meets Sydney. But the thing...
Call him handsome.
Ah, my God, yes. Why do you call him handsome?
Because he is.
Elegant.
Elegant. And does he have a little area where he's improving his elegance?
Yeah.
He's perfect. Oh my goodness. You see how well they have learned how to grow grapes and how to raise wine? They have all the elements of doing it in a perfect order. You see the thing?
Yeah.
You are going to... Sydney must be a most stupendous, super stupendous dog. It's not stupid, though, but a super stupendous dog, because he is being raised by three genii. He's being raised, and perhaps a few more. And then, what does Sydney have to do every day? Sydney has to take care of his brother. His name is Mule.
Playboy.
Huh?
Playboy.
Playboy.
Flamel.
Flame.
Flamebo. So he has to take care of Flamebo every day.
Flamel.
And he goes out and he entertains Flamel and he says, Flamel, let's play. And so Flamel says, oh, you want a three-card stud, or you want to play Monopoly, or what do you want to play? Bridge, Rummy? And Sydney says, no, I think we'll just play ball. I'll throw it to you and you throw it to me. And Flamel says, well, I can kick it better than I can throw it. And so Sydney says, well, I can run and catch it better than I can kick it. So you kick it and I'll catch it. And so the two of them play a great game. But you see, enter into it. Put intelligence in everything they do. This is what intelligent parents do with children. They make their children out to be the most intelligent. My kid? He's a genius. He's fantastic. Ellen, I told you the story about it, went to school because her son was having a little difficulty. And the teacher said, I want to see her. And she went in and said, what do you want to see me? What do you want to see? You want me? You want... I have a genius son. What do you want to see me about? You know? And however she worded it. And he says, I want to see your husband. And so the husband came in, and Ilya said, oh, you want to see me about my genius son? And so the teacher decided maybe he should re-look at the kid. He might have been seeing the kid through one point of view. And so he began looking at the kid like a genius, as though the kid were a genius, as though that's his parents were, can't both be stupid, you know, and one of them has to admit the truth, you know. And so he looked at the kid, and he treated the kid like a genius, and by the end of the year, the kid was at the top of the class. Now, why wasn't he there earlier? Who cares? The moment you recognize a genius is not recognizing himself as a genius, that's the time to get busy telling him he's a genius. And that's the time to get busy telling your stem cells that they're a genius. You see, if he had been telling his own stem cells that they were a genius, he would have never experienced that with the teacher and with the school and with anything else. But he didn't do that because his mother didn't know that she was a genius. His mother said, Alias is so much smarter than I am. He can do everything that I can do. He does all of the bookkeeping. He does all of the checking. He does everything. And Alias said, all I do is play tennis. I'm just a tennis buff. You know, I just do nothing but play tennis. And then I have a housekeeper who cleans the house. I have a putzfrau who cleans. And I have a putzfrau for ironing a boogelfrau, you know, and stuff like that. And she says, and then I have the electrician downstairs, and he comes up and changes my light bulbs for me, and I don't have to do anything except act like a dilettante woman. And then Ellen met me. And I said, Ellen, you are a genius. You are fantastic. You are magnificent. You are wonderful. She says, since when? And I said, since right now. And so then she decided to change her way and be a genius. And within a very few weeks, she demonstrated her genius so beautifully that she just ended up saying, hey, everybody, you know, I'm God, you know? And everybody said, well, her husband especially said, oh, you finally found out. But you see, this is the wonderful thing. She started telling her stem cells a little late in life how wonderful. She told them they were good tennis players, you know, and they played good tennis. She told them that they were good at giving tea parties, and she gave good tea parties, right? And she was a pretty woman to be on her husband's arm, you know, as he went anyplace. But she was just the dumb broad, you know, who her husband was the smart one. And you did. You played that game, and you played it well. But then you decided you had enough. You were going to be yourself. but you didn't know who yourself was. And so you had to start telling yourself. You had to start giving your stem cells a role model to be. And so what she did, she started associating with some of her very successful, domineering, dominant lady friends, and taking on their self-confidence. And when she took on the self-confidence, it was not something that went over very well, because it was not something that was expected. And you see, this is what happens now. When we wake up to who we are, and we start acting who we are, everyone's not going to say, "Oh, goody, you got the message, you know, you're a wonderful person." They're going to say, "Oh, she was so easy to work with before. I could just tell her what to do and she'd kiss my foot, you know." You know? This is what happens to a lot of us. And then we wake up and we say, "Kiss my foot, meow, you know. I'm going to take..." And then, yeah, okay. So, this is what the story is all about. We could go on with a lot of more illustrations. Yes, Ingeborg. Loud enough so I can hear it, please.
For instance, the cheese is, when it is made in a special area, has one taste. If the same cheese would be made in another area, has a different taste. And some cheese, we know, they are delicious, but when we buy them, also the mozzarella, is really tasteless.
You're saying that...
It goes back to all what you have now explained.
You're saying being a cheesemaker takes a genius too.
Yes.
It takes someone who really knows their business. And that's true. And right now, the Opel, Audi number 5 is out in Germany, and it is selling for $55,000, and it is one of the top cars in the market, one of the most beautiful cars in the market, and the BMW is out for $96,000, and it is a little less than the Opel, the Audi, a little less than the Audi, and it's in the magazine here somewhere, I think, but it's fantastic, you see. So when you get people who want to put quality into something, they can put quality into the most inane thing. Now, how many of you know the word Hyundai? Hyundai is a car. Hyundai is a cheapy car, a $100 car that people used on the street, and when they're done with it, they threw it away, so to speak, especially in Japan. Then Hyundai got new management, and the management said, "I only work with class." And so they decided to put class into the Hyundai. And now the Hyundai and the Mercedes are standing on equal par. Can you imagine that? The Hyundai and the Mercedes, because the quality is both in the car, in the engine, in the motor, in the frame, in the body, as well as in the seats, in the automobile, in the dashboard, and all that other good stuff. But they're making it into like a very fine car. Like a Lexus? A Lexus is good, but Hyundai is even better than the Lexus. Really, this is in its new, in this one model. I'm not saying all models, but in this one model where they decided, we're going to go up and be on the top. We're going to be Maserati, you know. We're going to be right up there on top. And so they go there. And the wonderful thing about Japan and China is they are not at all inhibited by copyrights. They're not at all inhibited by somebody else's rights to the design and the management. So they just take a car and remodel it a little bit and put their name on it, and away they go. And that's great. It's great. Now, here we are with our stem cells. The stem cell is a single tiny cell born out of the allness, the infinite beingness. So, that's rather good, isn't it? Born out of the allness, the infinite beingness. Now, we turn our page here, and we look and we see every cell of the body is a stem cell which has been given a specific role to play. Every cell of the body is a stem cell which has been given a specific role to play. Now, just a few months ago, the scientific community would say, no, the only new stem cells were found in the brain. But then they began researching further and further and further, understanding and having already defined what a stem cell is and what it looks like and how it functions, and they're finding them everywhere in the body. Everywhere in the body. And then you can go, if you wish, into, name it, Wikipedia is a dictionary in the Google. It's in the research along with Windows Word and so forth. And you go in there and you put in any word you want. And up will come a host of information. Now, here is from www.cellmedicine.com/news147ASP. 811, 81 rather. The Institute of Cellular Medicine. For stem cell treatment information, call this number and so forth. Outside North America, call. And they have stem cell therapy, patient application, frequently asked questions, contact locations, Costa Rica, India, Mexico, success stories, adult stem cells, ALS, Alzheimer's, amputation, anti-aging, brain damage, child treatment, cord blood, dental, heart, immune disorders, kidney, liver, lung, and multiple sclerosis, and perhaps even more if the page went down. Let's see if it does. No, it's the same. At least maybe it seems it. No, it didn't go down. Okay, so here we have stem cells, a breakdown of cord blood stem cells explained. The magical ability of the stem cell has been made popular by media and public controversy. But aside from being familiar with the debate about embryonic virus adult stem cells, few know the tangible facts about stem cells themselves. What makes stem cells so extraordinary, and how do cord blood stem cells fit into this healing puzzle? All the organ cells in the body are represented by stem cells in some way, shape, or form. It is akin to nature's medicine cabinet. When one thinks of stem cells, if an organ becomes damaged due to injury or poor health, the body could prescribe the suitable treatment from this reserve. Each potential dilemma would be treated with only one dose of stem cell because through the process of duplication and differentiation, the cell would quickly create copies of itself to repair the damage. The only exception would be in the case of nerve, muscle, or bone cells. Replication does not normally occur in these cell types. Learning about the different types of cells, categorizing their purpose, is an important grasp this point. There are three primary types of stem cells. The stromal, these cells come from the fibrous connective tissues, cartilage, fat, and bone. The hematopoietic, this type of cell is found in adult bone marrow and umbilical cord, blood. Platelets, white blood cells, and red blood cells are created on the hematopoietic stem cells. The most current cell studies show that the cells are not only proficient at producing the components of blood, but other cells as well. And the pluripotent, any tissue in the body can be formed with these cells. These are diverse form of pluripotent stem cells, and the most widely recognized of the embryonic is the embryonic variety. Some adult stem cells have shown pluripotency as well. With the breakdown of stem cells noted, moving to the cord blood stem cells and describing the difference can be understood. So that is a little area there. And then here, I won't read all of these, of course, but here it says, research that's being done, And then here it says, in 2007, April, Newcastle University, bone marrow stem cells germinate into sperm cells. Adult heart cells found to have same capability as embryonic stem cells, University of Minnesota, January 2007. And scientists investigate adult stem cells potential to heal diseased heart, Parma Live, whatever that is. Rush University Center, wherever that is. So, and devices harvest adult stem cells and kill cancer cells. I mean, what they can do and what they are doing and what it's all about is just utterly amazing. Thailand breaks new ground, plans stem cell therapy. World's first Athens to host revolutionary stem cell transplant. Human hair follicles, source of multipotent stem cells. Human hair follicles. I mean, you can't get any easier to get to than that, is it? And then embryonic fluid, stem cells and old age, stem cells and old age memory loss explained. A shortage of neural stem cells in the brain was formerly thought to be the reason that older people exhibited a reduced capacity to learn and remember. However, new research reveals that the reduced ability may be caused by stem cells in the brain diving less frequently instead. I think it's dividing. Dividing less frequently instead. And here, from flab to fat. You know what that is? Flab and fat. This is flab and fat. You understand that?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I'm writing. I wanted you to acknowledge that you understood the words I was using. From flab to fat. Fat to become a lifesaver. October 2006, Channel News Asia. The very fat that many try to rid themselves of contains baby fat cells. These stem cells can be isolated from the tissue, cultivated in the laboratory dish, and molded into the type of cells you want to grow. Singapore doctors are planning on doing just that. Clinical trials will soon begin to develop techniques that will take a patient's fat tissue and create new cartilage, bone, and fat stem cells. Fascinating, huh? Environmental changes that cause them to grow and multiply and diverse, and here's news stories from around the world on these things. Sixth grader writes, wins essay contest, writes about the power of the adult stem cells. Embryonic stem cells use is morally unacceptable. When adult stem cells use is acceptable and is life-saving now. This was the message that was crystal clear after reading 12-year-old Eric's recent essay on stem cells. The outlook appeared to be bleak 2 years ago when Eric's baby mother, Hetty, was diagnosed with leukemia. However, his mother was healed thanks to an adult stem cell transplant, which Eric chronicles in his essay. Today, Hetty is cancer-free. The benefit of adult stem cells has already made their mark, and his mother's proof of that. But embryonic stem cells have yet to benefit humanity, as Eric points out in his essay. Brain damaged teens return after stem cell treatment in China. Adult stem cell dilemmas right under our nose. Stem cell all-encompassing cure, great news. So, we have all of this fantastic information, and these are more reports. These are just take stem cell treatment news blog. This is the blog on stem cell treatment news. And you can pick it up on your computers, and you don't have to print it or anything. But if you want to take any of this and read it and see that I get it back, like maybe even tomorrow, I'd appreciate it, because then I can use it further. But isn't that fascinating? I mean, this is no joke. It's no joke. In China, they are taking several hundred or more stem cells and putting them into the brain of a child around 10, 12 years old who has a difficulty, and a severe difficulty, and now the child, after the first dose, is able to reach out and hold somebody's hand and even open his eye and recognize somebody. You know, he's pretty far gone. Now, I would contest that they are perhaps going about it wrong. If they would instead take one perfect stem cell and insert it into the brain, it could refabricate the brain, but they're hoping to do it more quickly, and so they think the more is the better. Now, we know that's not true. If you put in too many, they fight with each other and they kill each other because they don't know what to do. They're being informed by all the other cells around them that they shouldn't be with healthy cells, and so they don't. But one healthy cell that goes in there by itself, it must depend on itself and believe in itself and know of itself, and with the vibrations of the doctors and with the confidence of the doctors in the hospital and the mother and father and so on, saying, this will do it, then it will do it and miracles will take place. Now you say, Herb, you get excited about things that you shouldn't get excited about because that really doesn't work that way. It does. Okay.
It's the same example.
Say again and loudly so I can hear it.
It's the same example and same process as Gregor, you explained Gregor's binary.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear one word you said. Would you like to say what you said loud?
It's the same process that you explained in the wineries.
That's right. That's right. It's the same process. And because that process is universal. That process is, what's the word for it? Self-confidence. That process is doing things instantaneously, knowing in your heart that's what's right, loving your work, loving what you're doing. And those doctors, if they love what they're doing, if they believe what they're doing, then they will be telling those stem cells exactly what to do. Okay, an absolute pure stem cell comes forth out of what appears to be a preconceived form while it reflects and is the original purity and integrity of the allness. The absolute pure stem cell is the original purity and integrity of the allness, and it seems to come out of the other stem cells, other cells that have been predicated. They're differentiated, they know what they're doing. But we know that when we put the cause in motion, and we put this thought in motion strongly and powerfully enough, that is not the case. And that does not have to be the case. It's exciting, I tell you. Being an illusion, each stem cell shines forth whatever is thought about, while always being its absolute self. Now, the stem cell shines forth in the brain of that child in China, that it is doing its perfect work. I would be very happy to see the doctors make a mistake and shoot these stem cells into the brain, but only one went in. And that one went in and said, good, I don't have anybody to fight with, I don't have anybody to argue with, I don't have anybody to tell I know what I'm doing, I'm in this brain for a perfect brain, for a perfect operation of a brain in every aspect of that brain. It's fantastic, you know, and so it is. But that's
how it happened.
Thank you. Now, you like that sort of confidence?
Yeah.
That's how it happens. This is what we should say always. And whenever I make a statement that is rather blatant and bold, you can pipe up and say, that's the way it works. That's what it does. That's how it happens. And that helps you, because if you ever fight me, if you ever do not approve of what I am suggesting to you and telling you, if you ever feel that you've got to look at it from another point of view, forget it. You have lost the benefit of the program that I have to give to you. I'm not saying that you should just come in here and say, worship Herb, and I believe you 100%. Listen to what I say. And if you don't believe this stuff, because this is what's going on right now, this is what the world is right now, and this is how stem cells work, and this is how the principle works, and that's what we're working with. And I want you to all have the benefit of it. Yes.
I just got a story. I watched on TV, I watched a documentary a few years ago, and this showed a child that had a, one of the brain halves was kind of damaged, so they had cut out the whole half of the brain half. And the doctors kind of, because it was a small child, they believed really that the other brain half will take over all the functions eventually. And it worked. I mean, they said, you know, if this child would be 10 years older, you could forget it. But then they showed this child being getting older, and in a few years it was practically a normal child, could go to school and do anything with one brain half. It would take over all the functions, and now that I hear this, I think that has to do a lot with stem cells, with the programming, and it doesn't have nothing to do with size or anything.
Isn't it wonderful that the doctors had the courage to go in and say, all right, this side doesn't work, let's cut it off and seal it out and let the other side take over. And if it works, great. If it doesn't, at least we did our very best. But I believe it's going to work. And that's why we're doing it, because it's going to work. And they spent a lot of money on that type of operation, you can be sure of that. I mean, can you imagine sealing up parts of the brain that always were working back and forth between each other when you had to cut it all off? My goodness. My goodness.
Now when I hear this, I kind of see that, you know, it should be possible at any age.
At any, oh, that's true.
The doctors believe it's just possible because it was a little child, you know, but I have the feeling.
Well, they had a picture in the magazine here of a man who, I didn't read the story, I just read the cut line. It said that he had something like 5 or 6 big nails in his head. The nails were as big as your finger, you know. They were in his head. Somebody must have not liked him or something. And they pounded these nails in his head. And the man went about living perfectly okay. And they discussed whether to take the nails out or to leave them in, because as it was, they weren't disturbing anything, you know. And he was amazing. He's amazing. And I told you the story about the newspaper that I had in Atwater, California. And I went out to see the 73-year-old man who had been injured on the highway. And the telephone pole had split off when he hit it and went right through his belly and out his back. And he was laying there, you know. And I talked to him and I said, does it hurt, you know? He said, no, don't feel anything, you know. He said, but I'm still alive. And so they came and they had to hold that log steady and saw it off here and then take him in the hospital and then remove it in the hospital. Well, he lived another 10 years. He was in his late 70s at that time. Amazing. I mean, it's unbelievable. It was push, you know, and everything shoved to the side. Or split it, whatever, I don't know. But he was just an amazing man. And you couldn't believe that a man could survive. And with his age, you thought, well, surely he would, you know, give up the ghost. But he says, hey, he's having too much fun. You know? That's life. So, we'll take a pause, and then we'll have our workshop to deal playing with my stem cells. So, you take a nice pause, and remember, believe in yourself, because I believe in you.